So starting off, the first thing that I sort of want to ask yourself is really, before you started online marketing or doing anything online, what was you doing before that? Like, so what was you doing before you started online marketing? And then what was it that caused you to feel that you needed to do something online or supplement your income or anything like that? What happened?
Yeah, well let me get into that. My background is in the banking and financial advisory industry. So I had a brick and mortar business, did traditional advertising, phone books, newspapers, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But then secondarily, I also am a minister, so I led local churches. And so I began to use the internet a little bit in blogging, putting sermon notes up, those kinds of things. So, you know, had a little familiarity with it, you know, used it to network a little bit, mm-hmm. but never really, you know, took advantage of it from a business standpoint, especially in the financial advisory business here in the States. You know, it's highly regulated. It was tough to put anything online, so I never really dealt with it. And so what really happened with me was in 2008, my specialty as a minister is I would go into churches that were dying and nurse them back to health, get them turned around, turn them over to new leadership, and then move on. Mm-hmm. And so I took on a church that I couldn't get turned around and ultimately ended up, you know, found myself unemployed, found myself with no money, and was really looking at what are my options. And so I decided, you know what, I've spent, you know, 10 years turning around dysfunctional, troubled churches. I want to start churches from scratch. I want to start them with fresh DNA. I want to build them up so that they're healthy from the beginning. And so really kind of committed myself to that process. The only thing is I needed a way to support myself. So, what I began to look at was a couple of things. I needed something that was mobile, that could move around with me, that I could take around the world with me. I do ministry work in places like India and Kenya and Uganda, so I needed to be able to work all times of the day and night. And I needed to be able to automate a lot of what I do. And so I ended up closing down my financial advisory practice and begin this whole journey of learning internet marketing. And so, you know, you'll hear me talk a lot as we talk about the journey. And so, you know, beginning at a place where you know just enough to be dangerous, but not really effective.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and then learning how to become highly effective. And then taking that a step further, how do you set yourself apart from every other marketer who's out there and marketing the same things you're doing? So for me, my niche has been in the network marketing arena. I wanted to develop residual-based income, and I wanted to develop businesses that I could plug people into very quickly and give them skill sets to support themselves. Okay. And so for me, I ended up moving in the network marketing arena, but using affiliate marketing as a cash flow mechanism going into that. So that's kind of the basic, you know, overview of how I got to where I am today.
That's interesting because I remember when I was starting out, I also got into network marketing. I think that's like a rite of passage when you're starting out online. Mm-hmm. Everyone touches some sort of network marketing type of project. And mm-hmm. some people it works for and some people it doesn't work for. Or maybe they just have the wrong system or the wrong mentor or so on and so forth. But I remember I tried Clean Easy, which was something that you have to put through people's doors. And you can like household products and things like that. I tried that. I tried Herbalife. I tried mm-hmm. City Solutions when it came over to the UK. And some people would say that I failed at each one of these things. The way I look at it is that each one of these things, even though I'm not doing them now, they were the building blocks and the education that when I did find the right path for myself, that I was able to use the knowledge that I'd learned from those things, which was confidence, in being able to approach people, the process of business and things like that, and actually apply them to what I now do, which is run a software development house and do a lot of JV partnerships and things like that, and license products. So, like, mm-hmm. I feel that the journey was my foundation, and it brought me up to where I was supposed to be. So I definitely understand where you was coming from. And would you say right now are you still in network marketing right now? In fact,
oh, yeah, I know, very much so.
I know that actually because I've done my research and I know exactly what you're with and so on and so forth. And so that's great. And I actually know someone that's in the same Tony Rush, I think it is.
Yes, I
knew him from back in the day, and he it was something to do with mentors in motion. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one. That was a really old school one back in the day, and that really helped me in regards to that's what helped me get my first telesales job, because I learned how to approach people by picking up the telephone and calling people, and then because of that, I was able to actually go and get a job in the real world as a telesales consultant and things like that. So it's really interesting the way that things work. So that's cool. So you obviously that's the reasons why you got into it, because you wanted to be able to support yourself and be able to support yourself wherever you was doing your work as a Christian and spreading the word of God, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. So as you started, so you now started into the world of online marketing. Like, you've got tons of information out there. I know you was faced with different offers about, we're going to make you a millionaire overnight, we'll make you a millionaire within a month, we'll make you a millionaire, like, you can make money from this, you can make money from that. How did you first of all choose what to go into? What was your thought process there? Then how did you start to build up your leads and your followers, your tribe within that business? And that question basically is me asking, how did you get your first people onto your list, but how did you build your first tribe is the way I want to sort of put
it. Exactly. I took the journey I think most of us take. You know, we come online, we've got whatever product we've decided is going to make us rich, and so we just start throwing the link out everywhere we can think of, and of course nobody buys anything. And so, of course, you know, you step back and you go, okay, that didn't work. So kind of the journey for me, and the second part of the journey is most of us start out going, what can I do the cheapest? What do I not have to spend a lot of money on?
Very true.
So the migration, you know, for me and for a lot of people is you start it with traffic exchanges. Okay, I can sit here and click and look at people's sites and have them look at my site. And, of course, you know, I got tired of clicking and nobody buying. So I stepped back a little further. I came in contact with Paul Kinder, who runs Traffic Splash, but part of what he ran as well was a service called Affiliate Funnel that talks about the idea of personal branding, that you brand yourself first and then introduce products and services on the back end.
Okay.
And immediately the light bulb went on, because that's how I built my financial advisory business. I was across the town square from my largest competitor. We sold the same things. Mm-hmm. We literally could stare at each other out our office windows. And the way that I built my business was I set myself apart from him. And so immediately the light bulb went on, and kind of that, you know, duh moment where you go, really, you know, how could I have missed that? Mm-hmm. And so began to transform the way I went about my business. So I started promoting myself first and using that attraction marketing based principle. I'm going to come out here and be the guy that's different.
So when you say, like, be the guy that's different, like you wanted to stand out and be different, how did you go about that? Because obviously if these guys are doing stuff already online, it's probably working for them. So how did you go about being different in a new market?
Yeah, well, I think it comes down to a couple of things. You know, you realize that not everybody speaks your language, but a lot of people do. Okay. And so what people are looking for a lot of times is they've already decided Mm-hmm. That maybe they're going to go with a product or a service or a program, mm-hmm. but they're looking for who do I think can help me the most be successful with this. So, you know, this is what I tell a network marketing distributor. There's 10,000, a million, you know, whatever that number is, other distributors out there are selling the same thing. Mm-hmm. Or if it's an affiliate product or service, same scenario. So we've all got the same capture page. We've all got the same sales pitch. We've all got the same autoresponder series. So what do you do to distinguish yourself? And so I began to focus more on if I want to sell drills, instead of talking about drills, I talk about drilling holes. Mm-hmm. And if I can teach a person to drill more holes faster, bigger, more effectively, I'm going to sell more drills. Mm-hmm. So I took that same approach to my marketing.
Okay.
All right. Instead of talking about my product, I'm going to teach you how to market on Facebook. I'm going to teach you how to get your mindset right. I'm going to teach you how to deal with people who tell you no. All of those types of things, the things that once you've chosen your million-dollar product, you still have to figure out
exactly
if you're going to be successful. So that's what I did. I began to use video very heavily. Began to do a lot of my own capture pages. They'd still lead you to the same thing, but they were different. It was something that you hadn't seen before.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that's really how I began to build that connection. And then as I got more advanced, you know, I started out there, so I began to generate a few leads on the traffic exchanges. And I don't mean to offend any traffic exchange people, but it's full of cheap, broke people who don't spend money anyway.
Very true. I've been there myself. I actually know that's the truth.
I finally figured out I got to market somewhere else other than the traffic exchange. So I was generating leads, but they wouldn't buy anything. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. My first
2,500 leads were that type of lead, and I thought, oh, I think I need to change something here because I'm not making any money. So yeah, I've experienced that.
So then I moved, you know, I advanced to the next step, you know, the next logical step. I became a safe list guy, you know, same principle. I'll look at your site, you look at mine, but this time we're going to email each other.
Yeah.
And so I built a bigger list, a little more responsive, but still the same problem. It's people who are broke and don't have any money, and that's why they're there marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to, as I moved along, I started using more systems and found systems that would really automate my processes a lot more. And so that became good. So now I just needed to match up my traffic sources.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I ended up landing on as my primary things were video, blogging,
mm-hmm.
and content-based marketing. And once I did that, everything really began to come together. Hyper-targeted leads, people who would pull out their credit cards and spend money, all of those types of things. Plus, video and blogging and those types of avenues allowed me to insert my personality in there front and center. Very quickly I can find people who are either going to connect with me or people who are just going to move on anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became very excited about that because even though I may not get near the numbers of leads I would in some of the mass marketing strategies, I get a higher quality of lead.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whereas if I were doing a pay-per-click campaign, it might take me 30 leads to generate the same kind of revenue that two or three will generate from a content marketing strategy.
Okay, yeah. Definitely, I understand that completely. So that's it's really interesting when I've been doing a few interviews with different people, and it's really interesting to see the similarity that people have gone through as they've built their business up, like traffic exchanges. I think traffic swamp. Traffic. I've done all those things. I remember I used to sit there thinking, this is it. Like, wait this few seconds, and I'm good. And then I, what's it called? And I thought, yeah, this is what's gonna do it for me. And then, like you say, you step back and you're like, hold on, I'm not getting results. Hold on, what do I need to change? And so you keep stepping back and you keep stepping back. And it's like, then what happens is that you get sucked out of the bubble and you realize, oh, what I actually need to do is this. And so, yeah. So it's definitely a journey that you go through. And it's just really interesting, but at the same time relieving that other people have gone through the same thing as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much so. And you know, but again, it's kind of interesting how you go full circle, because now that I've got good cash flow coming in, I've moved back into some mass traffic strategies that are paid, because I still realize that list needs to grow. And okay, so, you know, the thing with that hyper-focused list is, yes, they're very responsive. They spend more money than anybody else, but it's a very narrow group of people. Mm-hmm. And so it's still important for me to be flooding, that funnel.
System. Yeah, definitely.
Exactly, into the system. And, of course, the other part is you get more advanced. You learn how to segment what you're doing. So you're creating separate lists for what you're doing, and you're targeting campaigns towards...
Hey, you're answering too many of the questions further along now.
You're
asking some of the questions that I've got lined up for later on. that's a bit more of the advanced stuff I'm going to get into later on, segmenting and stuff like that. But before we go into segmenting and the importance of knowing who your buyers are, who serving your list and things like that, I want to sort of try to deal with some of the basic elements first of all, because I know that on my list I've got a lot of newbies, a lot of people that are just starting out and stuff like that. So I want them to understand some of the nuances of what you do in the beginning. So what I'd like to ask you is, and I ask everybody this, is if, for example, when you create, so to generate leads, you obviously need traffic, but then you obviously need a page that allows you to collect that person's details. Now, what is it about that page, which we call an opt-in page, squeeze page, landing page, whatever you want to call it, what is it about that page? What are the key elements about that page that allow somebody to convert, which means put their name and email address in and press submit or press give me instant access? Can you give me, let's say, three key elements that you would say are important about that page?
Well, I'm going to give you some of my own findings, and I think they're pretty consistent, across the industry as well. You need an attention-grabbing headline. It's just like an introduction. If you don't make a first impression, they're not going to read anything else on the page. So, so the best headlines are either going to dig into some pain, or they're going to reveal a shortcoming that causes a person to take some pause.
Okay.
And so we like to, the best headlines are those that expose pain, that make a person feel like they're missing out on something, or just really pose a question that is going to cause them to, I got to find out more, type thing.
Uh-huh.
The second thing, of course, video outconverts text any day of the week. So if you can stick a video anywhere on that capture page, you're probably better off. People like to be entertained. They will watch a video before they'll read a book.
Okay.
It's just the way we're wired. And then, but simplicity is great too. So there are some times that if I have just a simple headline and an opt-in box, it's just as effective. So I think it depends on what you're trying to move them towards.
Okay. So,
and then the third thing, well, the third piece here, let's grab too, is that opt-in box. There's two ways to look at it. If all I ask for is your email, I'm going to get a lot more subscribers.
Uh-huh.
But if I ask for your name, your phone number, I may not get as many subscribers, but anybody that gives me that information is a more serious buyer. So, again, if I'm looking for mass numbers, or I'm looking for people who are going to pull out their credit card, I can decide which of those strategies I want to use. There are sometimes I would rather make you jump a few extra hoops and hurdles so that I don't waste my time with you because you're a tire kicker. Especially if I'm doing a lot of phone work, that's definitely where I want to go.
Yeah, of course.
Now, if I just want to drive a lot of traffic through a funnel, I'm not even going to ask for your name. I'm just going to ask for your email because there's less revealing that you're doing to me, and you're more likely to give me that information.
It's like a lower barrier to entry, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to sort of dig into that a little bit more now, because I've thought about this a lot, and the psychology of, should you just take the email address, should you take the name and the email address? Does it make a difference if you take the name, email address, and telephone number? And does that actually make a person more qualified? Or does, once you've got, say that, for example, you took just the email address, but then you had an amazing follow-up series, that would build a relationship. I get so confused with that, and I think about it all the time, and it's like, I find it hard to sort of work out what would be the best way. I guess what I'd have to do is create three different campaigns within my autoresponder, one for just the email, one for just the name and the email address, one for name, email address, and telephone number, and then have the same follow-up sequence or same funnel that they all go through and see which one gets the best results. Mm-hmm. I guess that would be the only way to sort of decide what works the best. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I think it's how you operate. If you're dealing with a business or a product or service where you're going to be following up by phone, mm-hmm. then I want that additional information, not just so I can make the phone call, but a person who gives their phone number. You know, if I give you my phone number, I pretty much know you're going to call me. I'm giving you permission to call me.
Very much so, definitely.
And that means I'm a lot more serious about what I'm searching for than just the guy that gives me his fake Gmail address that he dumps all of his list stuff into. Okay, which, well, by the way, all of us do, so don't feel guilty. but I think, you know, when you really come down to it, Mark, the people who give you that information on the front end probably spend more money with you in the long run because they've already revealed a lot about themselves by doing that. Whereas, you know, we'll get more numbers if we don't ask for that, but we've got to work harder on the back end to develop that relationship. You know, there's already a degree of trust. If I'm willing to give you my phone number, that means something. There were no red flags. I didn't look at your page and go, this looks scammy. I'm not about to give them my information.
Okay.
You know, whereas if I do that and I actually give you a real number, that means that I have confidence in what you've put out there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm already viewing you as somewhat of an expert in whatever that topic is. So you know, I think there's both. You have to test both ways, but certainly I find, you know, for the network marketing environment, I would much rather use name, address, phone number because I'm looking for people who are going to commit to the team and stay with me. Affiliate marketing, on the other hand, we're not building a team. Either you like the product or you don't, so let's move some numbers through there.
So there's a unique difference there in the way that you're marketing based on...
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, I see that now because... I'm more of an affiliate marketer than a network marketer, so the number would maybe only be necessary if I was promoting a webinar and I wanted to send an SMS out just to remind people that the webinar is starting in like half an hour or 45 minutes or something of that nature. So, and that would be an optional thing, sort of thing. But yeah, I see what you mean. Obviously, if it's network marketing, it's a lot more relationship centric in regards to you talk with your sponsor, you talk with people, you get on group calls and so on and so forth. There's a lot more involvement there and you want to see that a person is willing to sort of give up that information to be part of that team sort of thing. So yeah, I see what you mean. You're qualifying that person beforehand. That makes a lot of sense. So just to recap, because we went through quite a few different things there. In relation to the opt-in page, Carl, you say that the best things, and I'm not saying I agree with you fully as well, is to have a very compelling headline. That headline needs to either grab their attention, needs to pose some sort of question that leads to curiosity to make you want to know more, or make some sort of statement that makes you think, wow, like that's a bit of a harsh statement, or that's a bit of a shocking statement, or something of that nature. In your testing, you've seen that, and I also know this is true as well, that video gets more result than text, and it's just the fact people do just find it easier just to view a video than read a whole load of text. So that's something that on my opt-in page at the moment, I haven't bothered to put it into place, but I think I should, and I know that will increase my opt-in, my conversion rate on my landing page. So that's something that I need to make myself accountable for and take action on. Actually, put a video on my opt-in page, because my opt-in page converts quite well, but I have a video there that would probably make it convert even better. So I'm definitely going to implement that. And the opt-in box. So with the opt-in box, you were saying it's about for yourself, because for the industry that you're in, making sure that you qualify that person by asking them for the name, email, and telephone number, because in that scenario, that's the type of qualification you need to know that this person's worth picking up the telephone for and starting that initial relationship with. Is there anything about the position of that opt-in box that's important to you?
Oh yeah, I think so. I like to put it off to the right, because that's the natural flow of the eyes. The other thing I always do is there's always a big arrow that points to it, or a set of arrows, and it tells you exactly what I want you to do. Please enter in your name, email, phone number, to move on to whatever the funded proposal is.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's and since there are newbies, funded proposal simply means I'm offering you something of value in exchange for your information. And it's one of the greatest tools that you know, you need to learn very quickly. People will opt in when they think they're getting something of value from you. So I wanted to preface that. But, yeah, I like it off to the right at eye level to the video. And so when a person gets done watching the video, they can just look. In the video, I'll normally tell them, enter your information, the box on the right. So there's just a lot of things pointing to that box and drawing their attention there.
Okay. So the other question I've got is that, because I've just started using SafeSwaps. Like, I've actually literally been in the program for about a month now. And obviously, I think I came in with a strong standing because I had a decent sized list as I came into the place. It was quite easy to get established quite quickly in there. But one thing that I've noticed is that obviously, to make it work, you need to do quite a few different swaps. You need to do quite a lot of swaps, and I think I have a little paranoia because I think to myself, if I do all these swaps, is it going to affect my relationship with my list and so on and so forth? And I have spent a lot of time in creating a follow-up sequence where I put a lot of information into about my story, and I really try to build a story around what I did and so on and so forth. And I find that's helped me in regards to increasing my open rates slowly and my click-through rates and the consistency of me generating sales. But what is your thoughts in regards to how you maintain a good relationship with your list? And do you think that mailing your list every day or every other day affects that relationship? Or what things could affect it, what things you could mail? What's your views on that, really?
Well, my views are evolving.
Sorry about the way I ask questions. It's like...
No, it's great. My views on that are evolving a little bit. I used to be really worried about that, but I've really come to the conclusion that there's one thing I want on that list. I either want you to engage and buy something, or I want you to unsubscribe so I can quit paying for you. That seems pretty brash, but at the end of the day, I'm paying AWeber for you to be on that list. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to take advantage of tools and recommendations that I make to you, when I'm looking at a safe swap, I've looked at that offer, at that capture page. If I don't think it's a good fit, I'm not going to send it to you. Mm-hmm. But if you're just going to sit there looking for the next freebie offer, you're not going to make me any money. Get off my list. And that seems a little bold and brash and harsh. But that's the truth of the matter, and that is a little bit of the danger with safe swaps, is we're exchanging free offers back and forth. And so a lot of times we're building up lists of freebie seekers.
Okay.
And freebie seekers don't really make us a whole lot of money at the end of the day. We almost get into the traffic exchange trap a little bit.
Okay.
But the beauty of it is most of the list owners, we've got buyers in those lists as well. So it's not a bad thing. But I think the real key is, does that offer fit the personality of your list? And not being afraid to tell another list owner, listen, it's just not a fit for my list. I'm not going to send it. And, you know, if you want to try a different offer, great, send it to me. I'll look at it. But there are just some people, you know, I had a guy here a few weeks ago. We tried three different offers that he sent me, but none of them were fit for my list. They were all get-rich-quick type offers, and I don't send that kind of stuff to my list. I'll send training. I'll send you courses on how to learn anything you want to learn. But I'm not going to send you a get-rich-quick offer. So I think that's, you know, that's the thing. But I think the other thing, you know, that we can do, Mark, is we just preface our list that, you know, from time to time, I'm going to send you offers from other marketers that I think are of some value that may help you in what you're trying to do. Because, you know, when I become that resource, what's funny is I get emails back that will say, hey, this offer you sent out today, is this really a good thing? Do you really think I ought to take a look at it? Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's that, hey, you know, I wouldn't send it to you if I didn't have some comfort with it, yeah, or if I didn't know the list owner. Mm-hmm. I think you're okay to take a look at it. And once you get in there, if it's not for you, fine, don't buy it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I get that as well myself, because when I first started building my list, I think what I did is I just thought, okay, let me go and get joined a load of different affiliate programs. I'll be honest, this is what I did. I copy and pasted out the affiliate swipes. I put it all in a follow-up sequence. So I had the first swipe was day one, day two, day three, and I had about 30 different affiliate offers. And it started off, it was all good. So I had a way to drive traffic. I worked out a way I could drive traffic through to my lead funnel. And they'd come in and they'd see these different offers and I'd make a few sales. But then what I started to notice is that, like, after, say, the 10th day, the open rates and click-through rates went virtually to nothing. And there was no consistency there. And I was like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? What can I do? So I thought, what? And I thought about the process that I'm taking the person through, and I put myself in their shoes. And I thought, how do I feel when I just get offers from these different people that are sending me stuff? And I just start to ignore them. And if I look in my... like you say, that email that you put all of your, that you subscribe to everything with, I've got like 83,000 emails in there. I'm just looking at it right now. And a lot of the emails have not been opened. These have not been opened. And when I look at ones that have been opened, it's all from people that add value. Like I'm scrolling through them and I'm just looking for them right now. And I can see, like, they're all from people that, like for example, Rick Chevron, Lee McIntyre, Alex Jaffries. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. All from people that I feel, as part of their process, they've added some sort of value to me. They've made me feel that I can learn something. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then I thought, okay, what do I do? How do I add this value? And I actually went out and I bought a course. I think it was called Autoresponder Madness, and I actually spent the time crafting my story and talking about how it's important and reflecting that on that person, how it relates to them and my story relates to them and stuff like that. And as soon as I did that, I started adding some real value and content into my follow-up sequence. I straight away noticed that my open rates went up. They slowly started to creep up. So people that say opened up on day 15 would think, wow, that was interesting, different from everybody else. And then they went back and read everything else from day one. So my open rate slowly started to creep up. My click-through started to creep up and my sales started to increase. So adding value, without a doubt, is key. So I can, like, I agree with you 100% there, man. And the proof is in the pudding. Is that what they say? The proof's in the pudding?
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think the other thing too, Mark, you know, what I found is when I started sending some of these swaps, it actually bumped my open rates because it was something different.
Yes. Okay.
And so, you know, I saw probably a 15% increase in my open rates when I started throwing some swaps in there. So, you know, what I've done with my list is I have 3 days a week that I'll swap other marketer stuff. Mm-hmm. And so basically my list knows if you get it on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, it may have not come from me. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that I want to pass on. But what I try and do in the rest of the week is add a lot of value. And there's always an offer in the PS, or there's always a place that somebody can take action. But I run my list in cycles. So I may go, you know, 3 weeks out of the month that's a lot of value, and then 1 week that's just heavy pitch. And then I may change that up the next month, and I may do 2 weeks of pitch and 2 weeks of value.
Okay.
And so, you know, I try to keep it fluid and moving, and so, you know, that way the list doesn't just feel like it's always the same old thing. So I'm always trying to bring some new ideas, some fresh offers, fresh training, you know, back in front of them. Hey, if you've been with me a while, you know I'm using this strategy. Here's a tweak that I learned to it. Or, you know, here's a new tool that I've just started using. Here's my results. Here's the link. Go check it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Well, the good thing is that as we're having this conversation, a lot of the questions that I've had pre-prepared, you're answering them already, so it allows me to sort of move on. But then one question that I've got here, and hopefully you're open enough to be able to answer this question, but if you don't feel comfortable answering this question, just let me know, is when, as you've been building your list, what would you say is the biggest mistake or errors that you've made while building your list, and you'd advise people not to do, or advise people to be aware of these things that could come up? What would you say is the biggest mistake or error that you've come across?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of big mistakes. The first one I talked about was where I began building my list. I chose a market of people that don't spend money, and I wasted a lot of time there. And so that was the first mistake. I built from the wrong place.
Okay.
The second mistake is I didn't weave my story into my autoresponder. For the longest time, all I used was a canned autoresponder series from, you know, a system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that it didn't work, but it didn't attach people to me. And, and so, you know, even as an affiliate marketer, I still want people to value my opinion. I still want to be the guy that they take my recommendation over anybody else.
Yes.
And so, you know, that was the second mistake. I think the third mistake was I was somewhat neglectful with my list.
Okay.
I was not giving them opportunities to engage me in webinars and conference calls and to really gain feedback from them.
Yes.
You know, when I began to you know, put out pieces of content that said, I want you to email me. I want you to, like, I sent one out a few weeks ago, and I was talking about defining moments in your life. And so I challenged all of my readers. I said, if this describes you today and you've decided there's no turning back, you're going to push forward no matter how painful it is, send me an email that says no turning back in the subject line.
Mm-hmm.
I had four people do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what came out of those conversations was them saying, I'm willing to do whatever you tell me to do. What products do I need, and how do I use them?
Oh, so you built basically raving fans by just interacting.
That's it.
And
I think that's part of it, Mark. We're in a social media world today. Part of the thing that I wasn't doing early on with my list, I wasn't pointing them back to my blog. I wasn't pointing them back to my YouTube videos. I wasn't pointing them to my Facebook fan page. I was missing out on so many opportunities to engage and reinforce my marketing message apart from that email. Because if I can get them to go look at the blog, they're going to, again, be presented with all the things that I'm all about.
Mm-hmm.
One more time. And if I can engage them on Facebook, well, now I become not just this marketer, but they can read about me homeschooling my daughter. They can read about what trip I just went on. They can read about what I'm cooking for dinner. And I become a real person. And they can say, you know what, if this idiot can do it, I can do it too.
Don't say that. But I know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean. And I can definitely trace back times where I've become a fan of somebody where they've basically exposed something personal about themselves, or they've related me in such a way that's more than just teaching me a technique. It's just made me connect with them on a deeper level, and I can definitely trace back to some of my mentors and things like that where they've done that, and that's helped me sort of become a fan of theirs and so on and so forth. So I definitely can see how that helps, and I guess that's how people with smaller lists can outbeat people with bigger lists, because they spend so much time building that relationship with their list. A lot more people on that list is responsive, and even when I look at safe swaps and I look at the size of people's list versus the average clicks and things like that, like, I know it can be skewed because some people are just matching clicks and things like that, but I've seen people that they've got a few thousand on the list, but they're still generating like 50 to 100 clicks and things like that, and it's like, wow. And then, but then you see people with 10,000-20,000 on the list, and they're still generating 50 to 100 clicks, and you're like, how comes? Like, shouldn't you be generating 10 times that now? But
exactly.
But then it's, I guess some people might may get lazy, and they just send offers to their list now, and do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's all about the time you take with your list, I think, is very important. And as I said, from when I realized to change that, I saw a big difference. So I think it's very important to do that. So just to recap on that, because I think it's important for people to know not just what works, but what things to try to avoid. When we're talking about mistakes and errors, what Carl was saying is that he found that because he neglected to sort of sometimes get to interact with his list, to get maybe in some live sort of conferences or webinars with his list, or maybe even survey his list and then segment them and have different messages for his list, because he neglected to do some of those things, he lost the opportunity to connect with them on a deeper level, which potentially has lost him the opportunity to really serve them better. So now he's getting a lot more involved in interacting with his list in more than just the email. So it's like on his Facebook, on his blog, through webinars, through tele seminars, through interviews like this and things like that. So it's like multiple touch points, if you like.
Yeah, and I think something else too, Mark, we need to cover, because it's a basic principle of business. Huh? That buyer is the greatest asset you have, because once they have bought from you, chances are, if you take care of them, they will buy from you over and over and over again. And so, you know, what has happened in my list is I have people that buy everything from me. Mm-hmm. I have, anytime I bring on a new network marketing business, I work with the same people in multiple businesses because they trust me. Mm-hmm. And once I've secured that buyer, I can make more money off of that buyer than I will ever make off of a first-time buyer. Okay. That repeat buyer is more valuable to me than anything else. So if I don't take care of them, I really have thrown away the most valuable asset that I have. And that, so that's what allows me to be effective. You know, anytime I launch a new product, anytime I bring in a new company, you know, I send an email out, and these people are attached to me. They've decided that they trust me, that they are fans, that they trust my judgment, they see what I do, and so they don't hesitate to pull out their wallet and get going, and they will call and apologize if they can't, you know. And so,
wow.
That's the kind of list that we all want. I mean, you know, I can have 100,000 people on a list that don't ever buy anything. Big deal.
Pointless. Yeah, that's pointless.
Who cares?
Yeah.
But if I've got, you know, 500, 1,000 people who are buyers, mm-hmm. who buy consistently, who buy over and over again, I can run circles around marketers with a list 10 and 15 times bigger.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And, in fact, I've seen that happen a lot lately as well. And so, yeah, definitely, that's some really good advice there. And guys, take heed to what is being said here today, because this is some really valuable information, which is cutting-edge information that we're doing right now, things that we've gathered from our own experience of building our business online. So if you're starting out and you want to know what's working right now, this is sort of information that you need to listen to, but more than just listen to, you need to work out how you can implement and take action on it within your business. And maybe some of the parts are not for you, but what you need to do is just take out what works for you and take action on it. And once you get it working, work out ways to scale it up. Okay, guys? So, yeah. So, continuing on. We touched on it a bit earlier where you're talking about segmenting the list and so on and so forth. So, firstly, I think we need to make people understand what segmenting your list is, but then why do you segment your list? Like, what's the point? Why do you send to everybody? Why do you send the same message to everybody? Why would you segment your list?
Yeah, well, let's get into that. You know, there's a basic segment, which is your buyers and your non-buyers.
Okay.
And your reason for doing that is just what we talked about. A person who's already a buyer is more likely to be a buyer on any other offer you sent. Once they've broken the ice, so to speak, of pulling out their credit card and making that purchase, there's not the level of resistance to it that somebody else might have. So that's you know, the basic segment anybody should be making is know who your buyers are.
Uh-huh.
But then from there, you know, let's take a look at segmenting to a target market. You know, if my target market is network marketers who want to make money online and I throw them a weight loss offer, I'm probably not going to get good response. That's not what they're looking for.
Yeah, very true.
But if I've got a list full of people who are yo-yo dieters and desperate to lose weight, that weight loss offer is going to go well, but the make money from home offer might not go so well.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I see a lot of marketers doing this, not just in what they send to their list, but even in their marketing. So, you know, they'll go buy paid advertising on a dating site and advertise a make money online opportunity, and then they wonder why they get horrible results out of it, and they feel like all they've done is wasted their money. Well, they didn't match up their audience to what they were marketing, and I always liken it to fishing. You know, if I'm going to go fishing for sharks, mm-hmm. I don't go down to the river. I have to go to the ocean. That's where the sharks are.
Okay.
And so, you know, what I see a lot of marketers doing is they're throwing shark bait in the middle of the river and wondering why they're not catching anything. Well, number one, there's no sharks there. Number two, freshwater fish can't bite the bait. You know, there's just all these reasons why it doesn't work, and yet people are marketing that way. I mean, you just see crazy offers in crazy places, and you go, you know, who's thinking here? And it's common sense. If I'm looking for people who are wanting to make money online, I need to go find out where those people hang out and market there.
Okay,
and if my list is built up of people who want to make money online, then I need to quit sending them offers that don't lend themselves to that purpose. And so, you know, that's where list segmenting comes in. So, you know, in my business, I've got a list for automotive enthusiasts. I've got a list for people who want to look pretty. I've got a list for people who are trying to lose weight. I've got a list for people who want to make money online. And I've got a list for people who love network marketing and people who want to buy precious metals and so forth and so on.
Oh,
and
wow.
So they don't all get the same offers. They get different offers.
I was just about to ask you that, yeah. Does that mean that you change your messaging for each person? For each group?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that labor intensive though?
No, it's really not. And you know, there are some of those groups you can cross pollinate. A network marketer at the end of the day wants to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So I can send him a make money online offer because he just wants to make money.
Yep.
He's just choosing network marketing as the main vehicle. But with some education, I can show him, hey, this affiliate marketing needs to be an important part of your business as well. Or this CPA offer can be a funding mechanism for, you know, what you're doing. And so a lot of this is just educating your audience. You know, if you're going to send them something that's a little outside of the niche,
mm-hmm.
as long as you can explain why you're sending it to them and help it make sense for them, they'll respond to it. You know, I did that here recently. I promoted a CPA offer to my network marketing list, but I prefaced it as here's a funding mechanism so you can go out and buy paid advertising for your network marketing business.
Perfect. So yeah, so about the, so you positioned it correctly. Okay. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. One thing I have to admit is that I spend quite a bit of money. Like you say, once I become a customer of somebody, I'll probably buy nearly everything that person's got, because it, first of all, it takes a long time for me to make that decision to be a customer of somebody. But then once I've made that decision, I'll probably love everything that they do after that. So, for example, Rick Chevron, I love his work, I love his thought process and stuff he does in relation to this building. I've spent a lot of money there, but it's been very beneficial to me. There's a website called AppSumo, and I've done the same with. Like, for yourself, in regards to books, trainings, or mentors, who have you found to be most helpful in your... I think it's bigger than just list building, but in your business building efforts, what have you found to be most helpful?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of people that really come into that. Dagan Smith is a guy that I listen to nonstop. Guy knows how to market online, and not just market online. He's extremely technical in how he markets online. He studies numbers. He can tell you return on investment, and you know, he can break out a spreadsheet for any campaign that he runs that you know, just boggles the mind. But he's good at what he does. I mean, he's phenomenal. So anything Dagan sends, I pay attention to. Rob Ford is another guy I pay attention to. He is a genius when it comes to search engine optimization. Within the network marketing niche. And so anytime Rob puts something out, I'm paying attention. I'm paying attention to David Wood. David Wood is just a crazy I mean, you watch the guy and you go, how in the world does he sell stuff? I mean, he'll write a blog post on how a bird pooped in his pancakes. And he'll make $10,000 off of that. And you know, I don't get it. But again, you know, watching him has taught me a lot about just be yourself. And when you interject that, people are drawn to you. So those three guys in particular, I pay a lot of attention to within the niche. I pay attention to Mike Dillard for copywriting, for, you know, attraction marketing. And then of course guys like Frank Kern, for just the science of marketing and you know, really taking solid proven marketing concepts that people have used for years offline and mutating those into the online world. And so those are probably the people that I follow the most. I tend to be a little more niche specific, so the first three are definitely the people I pay the most attention to.
Okay, yeah, they're web market as well, aren't they? Yeah. Okay. Cool. Okay, so yeah, that's good, because I want people to get like a wide range of different people that are influential to the people that I'm interviewing. I think it's important to know who else you listen to as well. I'm just thinking about through the questions that I've gotten. A lot of the questions that we've gone through have been answered already through our conversation, which, in my opinion, means that we've had a good interview, where we have an interview where you answer the questions beforehand, just naturally as the interview goes along, which is really cool. So, in regards to things like somebody's just starting out, and it's their first month of their first month of marketing. Now that you've been in it for a little while now, and you've been building your list, you've been building your business online, if you had to give some advice to somebody, what would be the advice for someone that's just starting out, or even if they've been going for a little while but they're finding that they're not getting the right results, what would be the advice for that person in regards to helping them get a jump start into getting some results that are tangible?
Yeah, I think I really have two.
Okay, great.
You know, the first one is there are so many different ways to make this work. I have friends that make all their money doing nothing but hanging out on Facebook all day. I have friends that make all their money doing nothing but making YouTube videos. I have friends that make all their money with paid advertising. I have friends that make their money even off of things like traffic exchanges, you know, and so I think the first thing you do is you pick what is the method that most fits your personality, okay? So if I don't want to talk on a camera, YouTube is probably not my thing. If I don't want to hang out on Facebook, that's probably not my thing. But if I like to write, you know, if I like to create other types of content, then maybe that's what I need to do. Or if, you know, and I always kind of preface it with this, anybody starting out, you have two choices. You can either spend time or you can spend money. You have to decide which one you want to do. You can make money doing either one. In the end, you'll probably do both. But, you know, a lot of people, the truth is, Mark, they come into our arena because their back's against the wall. They've lost their job or something has fallen apart or they're approaching retirement and they don't have enough saved away or, you know, whatever it is, kids need braces, daughters getting married, who cares what it is. But the truth is a large majority of people enter into this realm because their back's against the wall. And so, you know, we've got to deal with the poverty mindset when they first get here and say, you know what, you can't think like a broke person. You have to think like a successful business person. So I think part of that conversation is you pick what fits your personality, what is going to let you shine through the most. And then let's craft what that strategy looks like once you kind of put your thumb on, you know what, this video thing, I think I can do that. Great. Now let's bring in the tools and the training that are going to help you become the best at that. But second to that is just like there is a myriad of tools we can get into, there are also tens of thousands of gurus out there who all have successful ways to make money, and quite honestly, most of them are very legit. So so the problem is we tend to get what I call shiny ball syndrome in the fact that the next shiny thing that comes along, we go chasing it. Instead of sticking with the thing that's most effective for us. So the second thing that I tell people is pick your guru. Pick one or two people that you want to follow and mimic and pattern yourself after and ignore everybody else. Stay focused because it's that focus that will actually get you the greatest amount of traction the quickest. If I can focus. So when I get a new person on my teams in network marketing, inevitably they say, well, I want to do what you do because, you know, you don't chase people, your phone rings, you answer it, and people sign up. I said, well, that's great, but you didn't see the last 3 years of blood, sweat, and tears that made that possible.
What's that? What do they call that?
Paying the price, man.
355 days to overnight success.
It's that helping people understand, yeah, it's great once you get here, but you got to lay the foundation. And so when somebody starts, I always tell them this, pick your strategy and focus on it till you've got it mastered. Once you're a master of it, once it is generating leads and making sales, then grab something else and start playing with it. But find one thing and become the master of it and make it work. And once you've done that, two things happen. You're now an expert in something, and when you're an expert in something, you can differentiate yourself from everybody else. And number two, once you have that going, you can somewhat automate that process and then take on a new strategy for yourself. And so, you know, we always evolve and develop in what we're doing. So for me, blogging has been the backbone of what I do. Well, I finally came to the point where I realized, you know what, I could pay somebody to come up with a lot of this stuff, and would I rather spend an hour of my time every day thinking of something to write, or would I rather pay a writer $10 to just write something for me and spend 5 minutes putting it on my blog? At the end of the day, I'm still going to accomplish the same outcomes, but now I've just saved an hour of my time. And so, you know, we evolve as the cash flow picks up, as we become a little more sophisticated in what we do as a business owner, we begin to see places where we can streamline that process. But I think my caution to anybody watching this is when you start out, you can't start out where the guy you're watching is. That's just, you're not there. Accept that and pick your strategy, become the expert in it, pick your guru in that strategy, listen to everything they say, become a student, and follow their footsteps. And to me, that is the quickest way to get up and running. Don't jump products. You know, commit yourself. The place that I see most people fail, Mark, is they lack commitment to what they're doing. They are looking for the next quick fix. And if they would just pick a profitable product that has good sales volume, has good marketing, good training, whatever else is involved in that, pick a guru who's an expert in their strategy of choice, and pick a strategy that fits who they are personally, they would make so much headway. And instead, you know, people will spend, you know, a year or 2 years just jumping program to program, looking for the easy button. You know, what's the thing I can just sign up and all of a sudden money just shows up in my bank account? Well, it doesn't happen that way.
I'm a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
I was 7 years really just messing about online, jumping from this, jumping from that. Yeah, very much. I see exactly what you mean. And then when my back was against the wall and I got made redundant and I had to make things happen, that's when I focused in. I worked out what it was I need to focus on, and I started to build my business, and I basically tuned out everything else that was irrelevant to me being successful. So I see exactly what you mean there. That makes a lot of sense.
Sure. Well, you've got a great example. You know, you're there in the UK, and you just had the Olympics there. Think about those runners. I mean, you know, if they start looking around at the stadium and everything going on around them, they don't win any medals.
Very true.
Because they don't start strong, they don't finish strong, they don't run strong because they're distracted. And we have to be the same way in our business. I mean, we just really have to have a laser focus and say, you know what, I've got to get to my goal. Here's the best way for me to get there, and I'm going to ignore every other distraction that comes along. I don't care if it's more profitable. I'm going to master this. And what people don't realize is if they'll master the fundamentals, if they'll learn their craft, then you can get take on any business you want to, and you can repeat the same results over and over and over again. So anytime I join a network marketing business, it's not a question of whether I'm going to build a team. It's how quickly is it going to get built, because I've mastered the fundamentals. When I pick up a new affiliate product, it's not a matter of if I'm going to sell it. It's how much am I going to sell this week, because I've mastered the fundamentals.
I get that completely. That makes a lot of sense. Oh, wow. This has been a really, really good interview, and I thank you so much for coming on today, like, and just spending the time with us. Like, if anybody like who's listening to this now, if they want to get to know a bit more about you and what you do, obviously I'm going to put links. Like, you can send me over some links on Skype and stuff like that, and I'll put them on the page and stuff like that. But if they want to know anything more about you, how to follow you, how to get in touch with you, what do you feel comfortable with letting them know? What links and stuff would you want them? Where would you want them to follow you via?
Everything in my marketing world revolves around me. So the central hub of everything I do is carlwillis.com. And that's my personal blog. You can connect with me there. You can get thoughts. You can get on my list. You can do anything you want to do that engages me from that one location.
Okay, so that's www.carlwillis.com. Okay, so that's carlwillis.com, okay, and that's Carl's blog, and you'll be able to obviously see what sort of stuff that he's putting up there in relation to his content and things like that, join his list, follow what he's doing, and, yeah, interact with him, really. So, Carl, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a pleasure, and what I love about these sessions is that, obviously, I've gone about my marketing in a certain way, and because of that, I've learned my way. But then speaking to other people, it introduces me to different little things. Just little things that either I didn't know or I knew but forgot about and didn't and haven't been actioning lately. So I've been taking notes myself, and I'm going to be listening back to this interview myself and taking more detailed notes of things that new things that I need to be applying into my business as well. So it's really cool just communicating and talking with you, because obviously you get to learn so much. And I'm just really grateful that you came on and you just spent that little bit of time with us. And I hope it'll be of benefit to everybody that gets to listen to this call. So guys, that's it from us today, and we'll see you on the next interview. You take care.
Thanks, Mark.